Morning Cincinnati, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together,
we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
This is 88.3 FM WAIF.
Cincinnati.
We have a lot in store for you tonight, so fasten those seat belts and tune in. A little later, we're going to be talking to Christopher McKay. He works for NASA at the Ames Research Center, and he has a few things about Mars he'd like to share with us. But first, we're going to talk to Jim Lovell, the pilot of the Apollo 13 that went to the moon a few years ago, almost.
Jim Lovell, welcome to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Well, thank you very much. How are things in Cincinnati?
Things are just great here in Cincinnati. The Reds won again.
Oh, boy.
where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Lake Forest, Illinois, which is just a little bit west of you.
So I guess you've been pretty busy here with the release of the Ron Howard movie and everybody calling you up and interviewing you and things.
Everybody call up at 11, 12 o'clock at night, yeah.
What's the coolest talk show you've been on recently?
Well, I was on a very interesting TV show in New York City where the cameras just followed everybody around like a big house.
I heard some of those shows in New York City, they do them all naked and stuff. Was it anything like that?
No, I didn't quite get that far.
Okay.
Well, speaking of nakedness, way back when did you see any of Tom Hanks' early movies like Bachelor Party, Bachelor Party 2, or The Man with One Red Shoe? And at the time, did you ever think that he might play you?
No. My first vision of Tom Hanks was in the movie Splash.
Did you ever see that TV show where he dressed up like a girl all the time?
Yeah, I remember that, but no, I didn't see it.
Well, how do you think he did in the movie Apollo 13 portraying you?
Well, Tom's sort of a closet astronaut. He is really a space enthusiast. When he was a kid, by the time we were flying Apollo 13, he knew the names of all the astronauts and, you know, all the flights and built rockets and always wanted to play the part when he got in the acting business. And this was the first vehicle that came around that he thought he could do something with, and that's how it got started.
Did he do a good job?
Yeah, I think he did. The guy's very talented, and he could, really look at somebody and get to know the mannerisms and things like that. No, he did a very good job.
Now, if someone sees the Ron Howard, Tom Hanks movie, Apollo 13, will they come away from that movie with a real sense of what actually happened back in 1970?
Well, I hope so. Ron Howard did a good job in trying to make everything that he did in the movie authentic. I told him when he started the project, I said, you don't have to hype the movie. There's so much suspense and adventure in it that your job is going to be what to keep and what to throw out.
The movie was based on a book that you wrote, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. A book called Lost Moon. It was about the Apollo 13 flight, basically.
After all these years, you might be sick of telling the story. I don't know. But real briefly, could you let in our audience, in case they haven't seen the movie yet, exactly what happened at the Apollo 13 launch?
Well, it wasn't the launch. It was 2 days after, on the way to the moon, when we were just about there, and a UFO came up and let the air out of us. No, I mean, I'm only kidding.
Now, you know, Neil Armstrong doesn't live far from here.
I know.
He may be tuned in tonight.
Yeah, he'll keep me honest, too.
And the story I hear on him, I was always wondering why he never really wanted to do many talk shows or anything, but rumor has it, it's because he saw a UFO up there. That's what he told Dick Cavett, anyway.
Oh,
or so
UFO,
the story goes.
No, actually, it was not a UFO, it was a gremlin, I think, that blew our oxygen tank.
So you blew an oxygen tank, and then that one blew up another one, right? One exploded, and it took with it another oxygen tank, so you're left with only one?
Well, yeah, one blew up and damaged the other one, and it was leaking, and we were left with nothing.
And you were, what, about 200,000 miles from Earth?
Yeah, just about 200,000 miles, that's right. About 2 days out.
So the landing on the moon was called off at that point, and they decided to get you back home.
Well, yeah, landing was impossible because we didn't have any fuel cells which produced electricity, and we didn't have enough oxygen to stick around the moon.
Now, at that time, did you ever stop to kind of feel sorry for yourself, like, daggone it, I really wanted to walk on the moon, or were you just so concerned with trying to get home safely that it didn't cross your mind?
Well, during that period, of course, it was a period of survival, so that was our main objective. But after we got down, it was a period of frustrations for not having completed what we started out to do.
When you were up there 200,000 miles away from the Earth, and you're running out of oxygen, instead of just turning right around right then, it was decided that the spaceship would actually circle the moon and then come home. Why did you guys go around the moon? Why didn't you just turn around and come back home?
Well, if we turned around to come back home, we would have to use the big service module engine, and we were afraid that the explosion had damaged it, and therefore we didn't want to turn it on, so we used the moon's gravity to swing us around.
Now, since you went around the backside of the moon, you got to see something most people don't get to see, and that's the far side of the moon.
That's right. You remembered, yes.
What's it look like?
Well, the far side, which is always stays away from us, it doesn't have the mare of the seas that the near side has, the black areas. It's more or less a lot of nothing but crater after crater on the back side. There is a beautiful one called Tsiolkovsky, which happened to be also in the movie.
Didn't you name a mountain up there after your wife?
Yes, on the shore of the Sea of Tranquility, there was a little triangular mountain which no one had named before. It's called Mount Maryland.
That's nice.
So did you want to try it again once you finally did get back home safe and sound? Did you want to maybe go on Apollo 14 and try to actually get to the moon?
I would have loved to have done that. However, some 20-some astronauts hadn't even flown at one time, and I guess I didn't feel it was proper for me to ask for a fifth flight.
Because you were one of the original ones. There was a shot that you may have been the first person on the moon, but it didn't work out that way. Is that right?
Yes, I was Neil Armstrong's backup, as a matter of fact. If Neil had broken a leg or couldn't make it for some reason, I would have taken his.
Well, did you ever think about maybe throwing some marbles down, you know, when you saw him coming, maybe dropping a banana peel or anything?
Well, I exposed him to the measles, but that didn't work.
When the moonshot was called off on Apollo 13, or the landing on the moon, did you guys give up any other scientific projects you had on the way, or did you do anything while you were flying home?
No, of all the scientific projects we had, the only one that was completed was the third stage of our booster, which had its course changed. It impacted the moon, and the force of the impact was picked up by a seismometer left by the previous crew. We learned a lot about the lunar surface that way, but that was the only, you know, scientific experiment that we accomplished.
So when you finally got home, where did you land on Earth?
Well, we landed in the Pacific Ocean, actually where we should have landed, and it's been a normal mission. All the way home, we had changed our landing sites from the Atlantic to the Indian, and then finally to the Pacific.
What was going through your mind when you finally hit water?
Great sigh of relief.
I bet he was thinking about a cheeseburger.
Yeah, we looked at each other and said, well, we cheated us again.
Was that you in the movie that pulled Tom Hanks out of the water and shook his hand?
Yes, I was the captain of the ship, just in the last sequence of the movie. That was my cameo.
All right. How was acting?
A lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing it.
What'd you think when you saw yourself in a movie theater?
Well, it's kind of hard to see yourself in a movie theater and think much about it. I mean, you're quite flat and everything like that. I'm just glad that Howard did a good job on the movie.
How much time did you spend in space before the Apollo 13 mission? I know you'd been on at least one or two other Apollo missions.
Yes, I was on one other Apollo mission, Apollo 8, and two Geminis. I had a total of about 715 hours in space.
Wow.
The last flight was about 142, so 500 and some odd hours up to the time of Apollo 13.
So what'd you do on those other missions?
Well, the others were Earth orbital, Gemini 6 or 7 and Gemini 12. Gemini 7 was the first rendezvous mission with Gemini 6. Gemini 12 was the last of the Gemini flights. I had Buzz Aldrin along on that one. And then Apollo 8, of course, was the first flight to the moon.
Were you at all in the Right Stuff book by Tom Wolfe? Did he write about you in that?
Yeah, he alluded, yes, in the book, not in the movie.
So you weren't in the movie?
In the Right Stuff, no. The movie of the Right Stuff concentrated on the original seven. The book encompassed a little bit more than that.
Okay, now when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, he said, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Now, I've never met Neil Armstrong, but I understand that he's not a real poetic kind of an individual, and that when Neil uttered these words, everybody at NASA said, what the hell is he talking about? Now, do you think Neil wrote those words beforehand? Do you think he had somebody write them for him, or do you think he just winged it off the top of his head?
Well, Neil's pretty creative, I think, that he probably wrote those words on the way to the moon.
But he's a turtle master, isn't he?
Pardon?
Neil's a turtle master, isn't he?
I don't know. You have to ask him.
What's a turtle master?
It's an insect.
Oh, is that a NASA thing? Okay, listen. I imagine since you flew a rocket, you're pretty handy around machines. Is that right?
Well, I would say I was real handy. Why?
Well, anyway, on the way down to the radio station, like in my car, my radio went off and my lights went off, so I thought I just blew a fuse. And then when I finally got the car to where I was going, I looked underneath, and from the catalytic converter to the muffler, it was glowing bright orange. It was red hot, and I was wondering if maybe you knew what was going on there.
Well, those catalytic mufflers are very hot anyway. That's how they get rid of the toxic gas.
But not this hot. Not so hot that there's steam rolling out and it's glowing orange and people are screaming, "Hey, your car's on fire, your car's on fire." I thought I was going to have to eject.
Right.
So what do you spend your days doing nowadays?
Well, I'm sort of in the speaking business now that the book and the movie are out, so I do quite a bit of public speaking to corporations and associations and town halls and things like that.
What about some of your colleagues involved in the adventure? What's Fred Hayes up to?
Well, Fred works for the government aircraft companies. Some of my people are still quite involved in, earning a living.
Okay.
Did we cover everything?
Yeah, I guess, if you're ready to go to bed now or something.
Righto, I'll turn the light out.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Jim Lovell.
All right, take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
I think Jim actually went to bed about half an hour ago.
I think he did too. We'll be right back, so stay tuned.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you. Song, let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, in other words,
yeah, hello.
Hello, Dr. Timothy Leary. This is Rob from the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. How are you?
Are we live now?
We are live and on the air broadcasting to three states here in the glorious Midwest.
Well, I send my best wishes to all.
Do you have another call? Is that your call waiting?
Should I take call waiting?
No. Yeah, no.
Well, I want to stay with you.
Okay. I mean, it might be George Harrison or somebody.
Well, that's his problem.
Okay. Have you been getting a lot of calls from some of your old friends?
Yeah.
The last couple of days. And, well, in case some of the listeners don't know, you've been diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Yes.
And you were quoted in the Tuesday edition of USA Today as being thrilled. I was now entered into the real life challenge of how to live an empowered life, a life of dignity.
Yep.
How you die is the most important thing you ever do. It's the exit, the final scene of your glorious epic of your life.
Hey, how about that? Is that a sales pitch or what?
Did they quote you correctly?
Well, roughly, you know.
Everybody's going to want to die now.
Well, no. It's a there's a lot of options here.
How bad is the prognosis?
What are you talking about? My health?
Yeah, your health.
Yeah, I have a prostate cancer, and I have about 2 to 5 years to live, something like that.
You're also quoted as saying you might try LSD again.
No, I didn't say that.
You didn't?
What do you mean again?
I said...
Oh, my gosh.
Well, looking back on things, I mean, is this a time of reflection for you, or is this more of a time of looking ahead?
Both. Boy, well, you have a 360 degrees, full tilt, round-the-clock vision. Boy, I'm watching everything. Not forward, back, up, down.
Well, what are you expecting to happen? I mean, I haven't gone through death yet, neither has anybody else. Neither of you. What do you think it's going to be like?
Well, that's, I consider myself an explorer. I'm going to try to leave as many clues as I can. And maybe someone will learn from my mistakes. I've made a lot of big mistakes in my life, and of course, it's the mistakes that you learn. You know, I'm an explorer out there in the frontier, and if I went down the Grand Canyon instead of up, see, that's the kind of mistake.
Well, as long as you...
follows, comes along later, you understand. So that's what I'm doing right now. I have no claim that what I'm doing to try to kind of orchestrate and architect and design my own passing on and maybe coming back. I know I'm going to fail, but people will learn from my mistakes, I hope.
What are you planning on doing to prepare for it?
Well, you see, I've been doing this for about 30 years, 19, what was it called? 66. I and a couple of friends of mine published a book called The Psychedelic Experience. It was based on an incredibly wonderful book called The Tibetan Book of the Dead. And this listed like 9 or 19 or 49 ways in which a Tibetan Buddhist could take the stages up, 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 freer and freer and freer. It's a manual, basically, on how to arrange, well, when you're dying or you're passing on or you're deanimation.
Well, it's also a good book on how to live, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure, that's the point.
Well, what are some of the points that the book spells out?
Number one, the basic lesson is living, neither living nor dying, is a solitary thing. It's a team sport. Living is a team sport. You got to have a team, friends, you know, all like that, and dying is too. So you got to build up, as I'm doing now, a group of friends and, that are kind of involved in a network of planning a very carefully designed dying.
Well, did you make out a living will where you either do or do not want to be kept on life support?
I'm way beyond that. Of course, I've done that. No, I'm going to decide. I'm going to press the button.
Okay, so
I'm going to let Blue Cross or medical doctors, they keep me alive until my Blue Cross runs out, and then they push. If anyone pushes the button, it's going to be me.
Or, some years ago, I remember you said that you'd like to have your brain taken out of your skull and frozen until it could be revived someday.
Yeah,
do you still have any plans to do that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm signed up. I paid about $35,000. That's option. See, the trick is, keep your options open. You know, maybe 2 years from now something would change. No, yes, I've been preparing for my transition, for about 20 years now.
And it costs...
You know, that book we wrote about the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you can't believe that's been selling. But in the millions, I never got any royalties from it. That's all right. But that book has been translated in many languages.
Who's publishing it?
What?
Who's publishing it?
I don't know.
That could pay for that brain transplant that you're working on so hard.
I paid for it already.
So you think maybe in a couple of years they'll have the technology that, say, if there's a young person gets killed in a car wreck or something, they can put your brain in their body?
No, I haven't thought of it that way.
Maybe they could just, like, attach some kind of contraption to your brain and you could still be thinking?
Yeah, matter of fact, I might even, have my brain there frozen and available, that anyone wants his brain can, use it.
Wow.
Yeah, user-friendly brain. I don't want to be my brain being anyone that doesn't want my brain. The point is, we have to have a little levity here. We're talking about the most serious things in life. And I've been dedicated for 30 years to learn more about what happens, how we can have some dignified, celebratory, wonderful climax to our life. So I've been at this for a long time. And you have to keep a sense of humor about it, you know, and that's the thing. You can't get too serious or cranky about it. But I've got more options and choices, and, you know, I've got two climax groups. I've got, I've got three or four options, but that's...
Is there anything you're planning on doing before you clock out, like a trip or anything like that, anything that you want to do on this planet before you go?
Well, to tell you the truth, you know, I've been around the greatest 70 years. I'm 75 now. Incredible time. Yeah, I've been around the world many times. I've lived in India, lived in, gosh, a year and a half, held prisoner by the Algerian government. You know, I've had a lot of experiences around the world, so I have no desire for any more, travel magazine stuff.
What about books, or do you hope to write you just published a book earlier this year. Are you working on another one?
Yeah.
What's it going to be about?
I'm going to send... you have to leave a paper trail behind you.
Yes, oh, yeah.
I've got a book coming out in about 3 weeks called something about, you know, exploring cyberspace, or surfing the cyberwave. It's a very kind of a comic book about...
There goes your call waiting again. Another late night talk show trying to track you down.
There we go, yeah. I'll take 2 minutes from Don King, and I'll be right back, okay?
Okay, Don King.
Never mind. We won. I'll get Gordon Liddy on. How's that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Has he called you since the news broke? I know he's one of your biggest fans.
We had a nice talk, yeah.
How's he doing?
How's he doing?
Yeah, how's he doing?
I don't know. He's doing great.
He's got a lot of success as a talk show host, doesn't he?
Yeah, sure.
You like his show?
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Well, on the radio, you know, it's a radio talk show, kind of like
I heard
us.
It.
You're not missing much.
He's a funny guy. I mean, he's a very romantic, funny guy, but I don't listen to him.
Maybe we got better things to do.
Yeah, let's cut to the next taker, huh?
How do you feel about Jack Kevorkian and what he's doing with assisted suicide?
I think he's a real hero. I just admire that guy. I got his picture up in my study here. I wish he wouldn't get in those situations where he had to be carried out, you know. Like, it's not a good idea to starve yourself. That's an old thing. Take vitamins and jump around, you know, Jack. Come on, don't. We don't want to see you staggering around, but starving.
Have you ever corresponded
with
Jack?
Dr. Pecorian, bang around. Show us how great it is to be alive.
Have you ever corresponded with him?
Oh, I don't think so, no.
Would you like to?
Well, yeah, I send a message all the time. I'm a great fan.
Did you know Jerry Garcia?
Oh, boy, no. Okay, well, this is the final thing. Yeah, I was just listening to some tapes that Jerry did like back in '70 and so forth, and the incredible power and humanness of Jerry. That is, we're all kind of staggered by how global symbol he is, huh? Yeah, it's been a heavy time for all of us, but he's going to live. He'll continue to live.
Well, we sure wish you the best, Dr. Leary, and good luck with your new book.
Thank you, and let's talk again.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
To all those three states. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Timothy Leary, you're listening to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We'll be back. We'll actually try to take your call, 749-1444.
me.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together,
we are the Chris and Rob.
That's us, babe. So listen, I'm glad you tuned in tonight. The phone number is 749-1444.
You know, every week this show absolutely is amazing. Some of the most entertaining radio you'll hear, but this week, in the first 28 minutes, we've packed in like 3 months worth of show.
Now, a little later tonight, stay tuned. A little later tonight, we're going to talk to Christopher McKay.
Christopher McKay is an astrogeophysicist and a biologist.
He knows a lot more things about the planet Mars than we do. He knows what the weather's like.
He
up
may
there.
Even terraform the planet Mars.
Do you know what terraforming means?
It means terra, meaning dirt. Form, meaning to make. He's going to make dirt.
No, he's going to try to grow oceans and forests and stuff on the
Project
surface
Genesis.
Of Mars, and then we can move there someday. Yeah, just like Project Genesis from the third Star Trek movie. Also, we'll be talking to Ben Folds a little later. Ben Folds is a piano player who leads a group called the Ben Folds Five. Even though there are only a trio, there's three of them, they're still called the Ben Folds Five. And we'll get to the bottom of that in a little bit. Hello, Jim. You're on the air with the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Hey, how you doing, babe?
Okay, babe, how you doing?
Hey, just great. You know, I don't like to complain or anything like that, but how long I got to sit by this telephone waiting for your call? You told me this was going to be astronaut night on your radio show there.
And are you an astronaut, Jim?
You said you wanted me to call in, you know, to call in for the interview from the astronaut thing. Like, you know, I'm an astronaut. I'm supposed to talk to you on the radio here tonight.
All right, well, talk to us about being an astronaut.
So what
mission did you fly as an astronaut?
Hello, Jim.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Hey, how long you going to keep me waiting here by this phone to talk to you?
Come in there, Jim. What's your name, man? Looks like you're playing a little golf up there, Jim. Come on.
Let's see if I got this thing straight technically, okay? I got to keep the radio on to hear myself, right? Because I can't hear you.
That's a big roger, Jim. You need to keep the radio on and stand by to receive transmission.
Okay, now listen. I'm an astronaut, all right? Now, do you want to know any astronaut things?
Yeah. What mission did you fly on, Jim?
Well, I'm kind of embarrassed to say I'm not one of these government kind of military kind of astronauts. I'm an independent freelancer.
Well, you've got your own space program.
Yeah.
What's
you
it called?
Might say that. Well, you know, I call it NASA. You know, I thought that was a kind of a catchy name, you know. It doesn't say, it stands for my own. You see, the initials, they stand for my own space program. That's why I call it NASA.
Well, if they don't stand for the National Administration of Space and Aeronautics, what does it stand for?
My own space program.
My own space.
That's MOSS.
Well, no, the initials from NASA stand for my own space program. That's what I call it like that, you know. I've been out soliciting a lot of astronaut jobs, but, you know, we kind of say, you know, in the biz, my biz, you know, it's these kind of buzzwords I use. I don't expect you guys to understand. I'm not going to fill you in later. We get some time. But basically, the economy's kind of down in the astronaut business right now because they call off a lot of these space programs for budget economics.
So basically, you don't have a rocket. What do you have?
Well, I kind
of got like some of those balloons you get at Hallmark when it's somebody's birthday?
No, I got some scrap metal and dynamite. It could come together any day now. We're going to take it up. I need a little, I need some funding. Now, if you go back, you know...
I tell you what, Jim, if you're willing to sit on a scrap metal rocket powered by dynamite, I'm sure you'll get tons of donations.
If it gets me to outer space, I sit on anything, you know, because I'm dedicated to the program. We could learn a lot of stuff out there in outer space, you know. I got a lot of experience in the business. Now, you go back when what we call in the business, the heyday of astronautism, you know, back then all the moonshots and stuff like that. I had a difficult time then, you know, because there was a big demand for your military government astronauts, and there was very little demand for your independent, your freelance flying astronauts.
So why didn't you go to the Space Academy?
I was there for a while.
What happened?
They caught me.
Doing what?
Well, I was kind of where I wasn't supposed to be, you know, late at night, but I needed to get this education that they don't like to give it to the independents. They got what we call in the business a cartel, you know, so I had to go get the education on my own. That's what we call night school. Well, they're not big on that at the Space Academy. Plus,
so you were swiping test answers and you got caught.
That's not exactly the way I will phrase it. You know, I try to tell them that's not the way I will phrase it. At the hearing, they had it phrased a different way, you know. But remember, there's two in the astronaut business, we say there's two perspectives on every viewpoint. So remember that, you know. But I heard you need a lot of astronaut information. Now you're talking to all these astronaut-type people. I figured, you know, you need a lot of info from me, so I want to give you all the information. It's dangerous business. You need to know that right now because you actually leave the Earth. You're not here. You know, you go up there, up where the clouds, higher than that sometimes, way up there. They got this movie out. You should go see it. It's about Apollo somewhere. You know, there's a guy in there. He daily loses his life in it, you know.
Wow, sounds gripping.
Oh, you should. I think it's going to win one of those Emmys, something like that, you know, for award for acting like that kind of stuff. In fact, that's why I use the name Jim Lovell in my own business, you know, because I figure if I use a name like that, it's not my real name, you know, but I use that for astronaut business, thinking that that'll help my career.
You know, speaking of helping your career and helping your business, Rob and I, being the savvy public relations type people that we are, we got a pretty good slogan for your own version of your own space program.
Well, let's hear it, baby. I could use a little adrenaline in the business right now. I could use a little shot in the arm, so lay it on.
We could call it Jim's Space Program, putting the ass back in astronaut.
Put the ass back. Wait a second. You don't mean I should take that personally. This is kind of a generic, what we call in the astronaut business, a generic slogan.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so thank you. I wrote that down. And fortunately, that's the same initials I've been using, that NASA. It fits right. I just wrote it down. It fits right in there.
When's your next space shot, Jim?
Well, I got one coming up here in a couple of weeks. See, the last several I booked, I had to call off at the last minute due to lack of vehicular accoutrements, you might say. So basically, I got another one scheduled here. I think it's for September 1st, something along that line, September 1st or 8th. I got the launching pad. I got the clearance. Got the weather report. I get my hands on the ship, baby. You're looking at a guy in outer space, okay?
Hey, do you guys really drink Tang?
I drink a lot of Tang myself, all right? I'm a sort of a tequila Tang kind of guy. I balance it out, up or down or sidewinders, anything to keep you. When you're in the astronaut business, baby, you're under a lot of stress. You need your Tang, you need your tequila. We call it TNT.
Well, thanks a lot for calling, Jim, and best of luck to your space program.
Okay, if you need to know anything else about the astronaut business, you call me again. But listen, don't leave me holding the way you did this time, because you don't want to tick off an astronaut. You got it, babe?
Right on.
Signing off.
Later, babe.
Later.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. The phone number is 749-1444. We got a hell of a show tonight. This is a hell of a show, isn't it?
Yes. A hell of a show.
This is a hell of a show. Did you hear about those poor old koalas over in Australia getting all stressed out?
They can't be hugged anymore, I heard.
They just passed an ordinance in Australia. You're not allowed to hug a koala bear anymore.
And yes, you can. If the koala is still hugging a tree, you can put your arms around it.
One of the guys, the agriculture minister for New South Wales, his name is Richard Amory. He says, passing koalas around a crowd of tourists causes unacceptable stress to the animal.
Poor animal.
What are they doing? Like playing koala football or something?
I guess. Ooh, hot koala. You know, like hot potato? That's hot koala. Ah! We got Scott.
Hello?
Hi,
hello,
Scott.
Hello, Scott. You're on the air with the Chris.
And Rob.
Late night.
Talk show.
Hey, I want you to ask Jim Lovell a question for me.
Okay, next time we talk to him, we will.
Does he know anything about that alien they dissected on Fox last night?
Ooh, what was that on?
It was on Fox, man. They dissected a real alien, dude.
What show, man?
They showed, like, this 1947 reel of film that's never been released, and it was from Hangar 18, and they cut it open.
Oh, you know, that's right up there in Dayton, Ohio, man. Hangar 18 is just about 50 miles north of us. They could be tuned in tonight.
It was like X-Files stuff, man.
Well, if anybody from Hangar 18 is tuned into the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show tonight, give us a call at 513-749-1444.
You guys didn't see that?
No, man, I don't watch Fox. Come on, give me some credit.
Right, me and Rob were sitting around drinking beer watching the ESPN2 network.
Yep, Muscle Beach.
They got the special effects guys from, like, Hellraiser and all these crappy movies and sat them down and said, if you can find fault with this film, then tell us. And they said they couldn't, so of course it's authentic.
What, because the guy from Hellraiser said, the law looks good to me.
Yeah, he said, oh my God, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. And he couldn't believe that it was, he doesn't think it's faked.
Ooh.
And it was just like a big skinny guy with six fingers and six
toes. So did you get scared watching it?
What?
Was it gripping? Did you get scared?
Yeah, they kept cutting back to his face, and he'd be getting progressively, his eyes would get wider.
How could they cut back and forth? Now, what was this? Just like a guy with a single movie camera back then?
Now they were showing, well, they show him sitting there watching this film, and then they show the guy who did Hellraiser, and he's progressively looking more scared, like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I don't see anything that looks fake.
Now, you're a big movie buff, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Now, did they have the technology back then to have that kind of film, or do you think it was faked?
I think it was faked.
Yeah,
man.
Scott, you're not buying any of this bunk, are you?
I don't think so.
Do you believe in UFOs?
Yes.
Do you believe in extraterrestrials that come down to America and kidnap rednecks and take them up into the UFOs?
Definitely.
Do you wish it would happen more often?
Oh, yeah.
Do you wish it would happen to you and the aliens were all beautiful women?
I wish it would happen to all the people who come through where I work.
I wish it would happen to all the kids that used to beat up on me in 8th grade. And on that note, Scott, thanks for calling and have a great night.
Thank you.
Tell all your friends about the Chris
and Rob
Late Night Talk Show.
Oops.
Phone number 749-1444. And we're having a good old time.
People always ask us, Rob, Chris, why don't you guys like cops? You know, I mean, this is what we always say. Because they're nothing more than fund collectors.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Chris and Rob, why don't you guys like cops? And our answer is because they're nothing more than fundraisers.
Fundraisers, and they like to hassle kids. The AAA, you know, the American Automobile Association,
right,
has designated three cities in Florida. These cities are called Waldo, believe it or not. Hampton.
Where are they?
In northern Florida.
Where's Waldo? Get it?
Yeah, I know. Waldo, Hampton, and Lawley as being traffic traps. Listen to this. Lottie, population 400, wrote 2,460 tickets. Waldo has 1,047 residents, wrote 2,092 tickets. And Hampton, which has 260 residents, handed out 294 tickets, even though the town is more than a mile away from the highway. These cities, 40% of the town's budget in Waldo comes from traffic tickets. Lottie gets 73% of their budget from traffic tickets. And of course the city officials say, oh no, it's a safety thing. We're just writing tickets left and right because it's a safety thing. No way, you're driving down south, they see an Ohio or a Michigan or an Indiana or a Kentucky plate, and they pull you over.
Now, that city called Lauderdale in Florida, Lauderdale, Florida?
Yeah.
It's not Fort Lauderdale, is it?
No. This is North, Meg. This is North
Florida. Is that that city that they used to write that blues song about?
Lauderdale, Miss Claudie?
Yeah.
No, that was a different
one. While we're talking about traffic tickets and cops who are less than professional, let me make a public service announcement. Can I do that?
Feel free.
Okay, here's a public service announcement from the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. If you're driving through Highland County... Highland County, through a town called Fayetteville on Route 50, watch out, it's a speed trap. I was driving through Fayetteville... listen up, Dad, you're going to like this. I was driving through Fayetteville a week or two ago on a Saturday night, driving no more than 10 miles over the speed limit.
Dude, what are you doing in Fayetteville on a Saturday night, you party king?
Oh, satanic rituals out in the cornfields. Mm. But that's neither here nor there. Everybody knows cops don't give you tickets for 10 miles over the speed limit and under.
They do in two places.
Fayetteville, Highland County, Ohio.
And Evendale.
So watch out if you're driving in any of those two places. A public service announcement brought to you by the Chris and Rob
Late Night Talk Show. I was doing about 65 going through Evendale, and there was a car doing maybe 2 miles an hour faster than me, so they're going 67, and bingo, bammo, there's Johnny Law right on his tail, while someone was probably knocking over some mom-and-pop grocery store a few blocks away. Go ahead, Aaron. How are you?
Pretty good.
Thanks for calling.
All right. I have a quick comment about Apollo 13.
The movie?
Yeah.
The book? The actual event? The movie. Okay, go ahead.
Because I've seen the movie, and I don't think it's that good. I mean, the only reason it got, like, any ratings, I think, is because, you know, they stick Forrest in a space shuttle, send him up there with a bunch of weird guys that, I don't know, it was just, I mean, I know how the true story is, and I think they totally bent it in this movie, because I know the real story, and in the movie,
well, Aaron, in case you weren't paying attention, we just got done talking to Jim Lovell, who actually flew on the said mission, and he said that he was there, he saw the movie, he even sort of consulted on the movie, and he said, it's a pretty darn good movie, and it's pretty accurate to history.
But you don't know if Jim, he could be, you know, lying about the whole thing.
Oh, Jim's getting a little cut from the profits. So
probably is if they got the rights for the movie from the book that he wrote, he very well could be getting some money.
So he's going to dress it up, make it a lot more action packed than it really was. Really, they were just sitting in a space capsule for about a week, freezing their butts off.
In Arizona, actually, they were just in Arizona the whole time.
They faked all those space shots, didn't they? And they were really in Arizona the whole time.
Because you know, Jim might just be a character. I mean,
Aaron, I think that you're a little jaded on the space program. Everybody knows that astronauts are the last true American heroes.
Yeah. When I was like a little bit younger, I always wanted to be one because my uncle was an astronaut. He wasn't a well-known one, but he would always tell me stories about it, and it seemed like it was the most exciting thing. And
did he ever go up?
Yeah, sure, he went up.
On what mission?
I have no idea.
How long ago?
He told me stories about when I was three. And
can you get him on the phone and have him give us a call tonight?
Well, he's dead.
Oh.
That'd make it hard, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for calling, Aaron.
No problem.
Almost anyone can operate a boat. No license is needed.
It's not like operating a space shuttle at all.
But the more you know about boating, the safer you will be. Take a safe boating course given by the Cincinnati Power Squadron. Why do I read this one every week? Jim, we have a whole box over there. Why am I reading this one every week? Instruction is free, and there is a small charge for study materials. Now, you think that WAIF listeners are big boaters, don't you? For a list of class times and locations, call 554-BOAT. That's 554-2628.
Could you read those phone numbers any slower? I mean, that makes for very boring radio.
I was translating boat into numbers. This was high-tech stuff. Okay. I was technologically advanced.
So the phone number is really 554-BOAT. Call 554-BOAT for a safe boating course.
Well, some people can't read.
There's lots of places to boat around the Queen City, too. Let me tell you, down there on that Ohio River,
Yeah, I catch some nice carp.
And I think they got a real big lake out in Claremont County somewhere. That's about all the boat you got around here.
What about that crocodile eating all the dogs? Did you hear about that?
Is that the one about Baby Huey?
I don't know. This crocodile in northern...
Say the phone number, Rob.
You know, 749-1444. In northern Florida, a lot of stuff is happening. They got these three towns that are nothing but speed traps, and they have this 300-pound, 6-foot... No, I don't know. What was it like? 9 feet long... 30-year-old alligator eating everything that moves. And he finally ate a dog. A cute little hunting dog was running around. Arf, 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 arf. And he sees the crocogator and he wants to play. Hello, Mr. Crocogator. He eats him. The dog gets eaten. The dog is swallowed. The dog is food for this alligator. But you know what the dog had on?
What?
A homing collar. Beep, what? Beep, beep. So they, you know, hey, where's my dog, man? Hey, Clem, let's go find my dog. And they go out looking for their dog.
And they come across a big man-eating alligator?
They find his three... Hey, he must got Sparky. So the guy shoots the alligator, guts him like the shark. Remember in Jaws when they opened... For the first Jaws, they opened that shark's stomach and all this like license plates and tires and stuff spilled out. So they cut this alligator open, and there's Sparky's little cock. Beep, beep, beep. And there's Sparky's... And there's six other collars in there from, you know, said like... Rover, Spot, Tiger.
Friday in Delaware Bay, a woman from Pennsylvania believes her dog fell overboard from her cabin cruiser, and she's offering a $50,000 reward to get her dog back, dead or alive. $50,000 for a dead dog, and the dog's name is Baby Huey.
The thing is, the dog is white, so every white cap, they go scurrying over there. Every time they see a white cap,
hey,
they're like, there's Baby Huey!
That could be my $50,000
reward. That's just a white cap. Boom, and they sail back over
for
to another...
$50,000, you can almost start your own space program.
I mean, that's like the urban... You heard the urban myth about the... There's a woman who's... A woman moves cross-country, and she has to get her dog, her dead dog, because she wants her dead dog buried with her. So anyway, they pack up the dead dog and they ship it across country. And then like one of the baggage handlers looks at it and says, you know, we killed this lady's dog. Damn, we better get a new dog. So they go out and they buy a brand new spanking puppy dog that looks just like the deceased dog, the former dog, the ex-dog, the dog that is now a part of the Choir Invisible. And then they get the new fresh dog in there. And so when the old woman gets to the airport, she's waiting for her luggage. Here comes the dog. You know, she sees her dog. Then the dog's alive and starts jumping around, and the woman's like, ah! And clutches, have a heart attack, and dies.
Doesn't it sort of figure, you start talking about dead dogs, and who calls but the spam boy?
Spammy, how are you?
I'm living life and loving it, kids. How are you? Haven't talked to you in a while. What's shaking?
Why do you wait until we're talking about dead dogs to call?
Because I'm part Vietnamese and I'm hungry.
So how are you this fine morning?
I'm fabulous.
What did you learn?
You know, I thought you were setting up for like a joke.
What joke?
I thought that dead dog story was like a joke setup. I was waiting for like a big punchline.
No, this is serious, man. This is serious business. We don't do those punchlines.
Chris and Rob do a fact-filled program week after week.
Yeah, I was driving down the road. This was a couple years ago. I was driving to work when I was doing overnight at the Tower Pick. And I was driving a big old pickup truck.
I can't believe you admitted that, but go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, admitted what, that I was driving a big old pickup truck?
No, that you worked for the Power Pig.
Hey, it paid the rent, and it was a fun gig, dude. And I hit a collie who ran out in the middle of the road.
Aw, Lassie!
So, you know, I heard it yelping, and I backed up to let it out. And it limped over to the side of the road.
Aw, Lassie!
And it collapsed. And I felt real bad. But I kind of redeemed myself because I boxed it up and mailed it to a hungry Korean family. So it was cool. It worked out. So what's the deal with the time change? When did you guys start doing midnight?
About a month ago.
Yeah? Midnight to what?
2.
In case you just tuned in, the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show used to be on 2 o'clock a.m. to 5 o'clock a.m. this night, but we're on at midnight now.
Actually,
tell all
morning,
your friends.
That's why we get these big-time celebrities now like Jim Lovell and Timothy Leary on the same show.
You know, I'm in a movie.
Oh, yeah?
Have you been reading the papers?
No, I don't read these Cincinnati rags.
Oh, my God. Well, we were on Channel 12 and Channel 9 News and everything, too. It's pretty cool. It's a female vampire flick, and I get to whack somebody over the head with a baseball bat, and I get to rub lotion on the ass of a stripper.
Cool.
And I survive the onslaught of female vampires, so I get to be around for the sequel.
Cool. Can I be in the sequel, too?
I'll see what I can work out.
Okay.
Can you act?
You bet.
Well, we could be ourselves, you know. You know they have like
you could be like a walk-on cameo.
Well, we could.
It'll be like Weird Al in the Naked Gun movie.
Right. We could be. You know, they could bite us if they want to. They could come to the radio station and take a munch out of our neck. That'd be cool.
There you go. On the air.
Yes, well, of course, while we're on the air.
And you could do a promo photo, we'll put it in everybody's news, and the caption underneath it will say, Lady Vampires take a munch out of Chris and Rob.
Whoa, I can see it now.
You know, and who doesn't want to take a munch out of Chris and Rob other than me?
You're the only one.
So has the response been phenomenal to the new time slot? Have you gained all kinds of new listeners? Or
oh,
have you kicked off the old listeners? Who'd love
they're highly intelligent and extremely articulate. Bright, witty, charming, everything we could possibly want.
As opposed to the old audience.
Oh, yeah, those bunch of slugs.
They're a bunch of morons. Putzes. Hey, and you know what? The new show's coming back in about a month, we're looking at.
What new show is that?
The replacement show, The Bar and Grill's off. It's history, it's gone. So we're going to do all kinds of new entertaining stuff with a whole totally new format, new thing.
In case we have listeners who've never tuned in before and don't know who you are or what The Bar and Grill is, why don't you fill us in?
God damn, you're smooth, Chris.
Okay, so this guy on the phone who called us up has his own talk show. It's kind of like a Chris and Rob wannabe show. It's kind of like, remember how after Star Wars came out, you started getting like Battlestar Galactica. It's kind of like the Battlestar Galactica of the talk show genre, and
here's the major difference, though. See, I get paid for it.
And what's your show called?
It is, as of yet, we decided to save the title for last because we wanted to get the substance there, because the one thing I got to say about The Bar and Grill was it was a lot of fun, but there was very little substance to it.
Yeah, sounds like your program director talking.
Very unfun to do after a while.
All right, well, we'll keep a lookout. What channel is it on?
WCKY 550. Home of the Bengals.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
All right, stay tuned. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We're going to call Chris McKay from NASA, and he's going
to
tell us all
about
Mars.
First, I would like to remind you that as old as Wave Radio itself, Swaran Jolly brings you the best music and news of India every Sunday morning from 10 a.m. till noon. Grab your sitar and join them only here on WAIF Cincinnati. Who are we talking to now? Are we calling somebody else? Song? No?